MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold Blooded, the Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in LA, and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, acclaimed comics writer and notorious Scott Summers hater, Rosie Knight.
Well, hello, Emmy-winning podcaster and totally unbiased Targaryen royal supporter, Jason Concepcion.
Somehow the X-Ray Vision podcast has returned.
And like always, we'll be here every week.
You'll hear from TV writers, actors, comics creators, pop culture critics.
Nothing is off the table.
Listen to X-Ray Vision on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
There was no book on how to escape a character alive. You know? There is no book. You know, when it comes to even like, when they say, why'd you even stay in it? Because we don't know no other way. Like, leaving it feels like you're dying. You know, they stay in it to keep themselves alive, you know? Especially the Chapo Mayo, they make already so many enemies. And status and, but, you know, I wish I had, like, surrounded by friends that weren't drug dealers and weren't on the street, and that they were all, like, stockbrokers and real estate investors. I just wish my dad was just worked at a factory. I didn't think that we were ever going to escape, like, out of this, kind of unharmed. But trying to imagine myself, like, you know, spending the rest of my life in prison, I felt like I couldn't, like, breathe. I felt like I can't say scared. It was just, like, this ugly, overwhelming feeling of touching the walls, like, and holding onto the gate. Like, what did I do? Like, what did I just do to myself?
Hey, it's 50 Cent.
And I'm Charlie Webster.
This is Surviving El Chapo, the twins who brought down a drug lord, season two.
When you've been raised in a life like this, prison vibes are something you know well. The twins' father was in there when they were born and stayed there for the first 7 years of their lives. Their drug career only started because their older brother, Armando, was sent to prison when Jay and Pete were 17. They did anything to avoid prison life. Only a year before turning themselves in, Pete said he'd rather die than end up locked up.
I'd rather risk a bullet in my head than to go to prison.
Breaking the cycle and giving their own kids a choice that they never had, a chance at a normal life, meant choosing to go to prison, the one place they spent their lives running from, and came at the cost of their own father's life, who was murdered by the cartel because of what they did. The consequences of their decision were slowly starting to sink in. Huddled together in a tiny cell in the special housing unit, the SHU, of MCC Chicago, with no idea when or if they would be free again.
I remember it being so cold that the walls would literally have ice on them. And I remember my brother and I were so cold that we slept on the same bed next to each other to keep each other warm. And I remember the guard saying, "Hey, you guys can't do that." And I was like, "He's my brother, you know? Nah, one of you guys gotta get up on the other bed, I'm gonna give you guys a shot." And I got right up.
A shot is prison slang for a disciplinary infraction, also known as a ticket.
And I was like, "They're gonna give us a write-up? Like, what's the worst thing could happen wearing the shoe? You know? It's already hard to be living in this, in the shoe, in the hole. Now we gotta deal with the cold." And I'm thinking, damn, imagine dealing with the hot. Like, you're just never gonna be, you know, it's not made to be comfortable. Or, like, the lights are on all night, you know? You gotta make yourself an eye cover. And it's just weird, like, I don't understand how that helps.
Because of what they were doing and the reach of the cartel, Pete and Jay were huge targets. They were put in the WITSEC program, witness protection inside prison.
Sometimes we call it phase one, phase two. Or like, but it's not that. It's just like witness protection while you're incarcerated, while you're in prison, and there's witness protection for, you know, when you're free.
So what's witness protection mean in prison?
It means that it means that you're going to be safe, but they're going to add a series of rules. And you don't get all the privileges that normally, like, normal prisoners get. It's the cost of, like, being safe. They have rules that could be, like, punished with, like, disciplinary action. So you can't use your name, and you can't say certain things. You don't get emails, you don't get, like, certain things that could come back and people could kind of get a hold of you. They kind of monitor who you could talk to, who you can't.
Did you feel like you needed witness protection in prison? Do you feel like there would have been,
you know,
like, hits on you in prison?
Oh, for sure. And one thing, like, it doesn't matter who you tell on if you're a snitch, which is kind of ironic because there's the majority of those people some way, somehow cooperate. So I remember I would be bored sometimes and they'll be like, "Oh, you snitches, oh, you're gonna die." And I would just, sometimes I'll argue with them. I'd be like, "Why are you mad? Mind your business." I'll be like, "Why are you here?" You know, eventually I won the whole shoe over. They got tired. What could they do? It's just us arguing back and forth. And I just, me and my brother would make everyone laugh. And like, we had to do something with our time, like, just because you're stuck there, sitting there. And then what happened was that next, you know, some people, some associates have started coming up to the show. And now they know that we're there.
Associates that you'd,
yeah, like,
cooperated on ended up getting put in the shoe with you.
They got in the shoe and people started kind of finding out, like, who we were. They'd be like, "Yo, is the twins here? Like, is the twins?" I know that I wouldn't have survived if I didn't have witness protection.
With the twins on the inside, setting up their customers was going to get suspicious if they weren't there in person. Someone needed to do the dirty work on the outside. And it couldn't be just anyone. It had to be another Flores. The feds pulled in Jay's wife, Val.
They asked for my help. And because Jay and Peter were no longer on the streets anymore, I assisted them. There were certain missing pieces that they needed. They needed me to turn in the ledgers. I went to the U.S. Attorney's office and took two computer towers full of Jay and Peter's, you know, their drug ledgers.
Val's job wasn't just to turn in ledgers and find missing pieces. She also had to essentially go undercover for the feds, at the direction of the lead prosecutor, Thomas Shakeshaft, even going as far as wearing a wire to help convict the twins' customers.
The customer friend of mine, his name was Kylie Murray. He went by the nickname of Cali, like C-A-L-I. He was one of my closest customers we had. He was one of my first customers. Kylie was like a big target for the DEA in Chicago prior to me and my brother turning ourselves in. And they insisted, they wanted us to cooperate against them. We had a Lamborghini parked in Atlanta. And he went and he stole the Lamborghini, even though he owed me like $5 million. The feds came and asked about the car. And they knew he had it because obviously they were surveilling him. And, you know, it was our car. And, you know, once we started talking about that, they, you know, they wanted us to cooperate against him. And he had owed us all this money. And they had asked Val if she could reach out to him and give him a fake story that my older brother was going to continue to sell drugs if he would be willing to buy them, purchase them. And Val met up with him and he gave her $200,000 and she gave him the title for the car.
Kylie Murray, also known as Hollywood, was one of the twins' biggest customers. Because of the cooperation the Flores family were providing, Kylie Murray was one of the many people arrested. In Kylie's case, it was for his part in a cocaine trafficking ring worth $1.8 billion. One night, whilst Kylie was out on bail, he was walking home and two men pulled up in a white van. They got out, shot him dead, and then sped off. Val kept the $200,000 that Kylie Murray gave her before he was arrested. According to Val, prosecutors told her she could keep it. Val's cooperation with the feds included a number of sessions where she would sit and proffer, giving the government as much information as they wanted in order to help the brothers' case.
I had to sit down with the government, and there was different prosecutors there. There were supervisors there. There was agents there. And so you have all these different departments that are sitting in one room, and everybody is asking me questions. And I noticed that when I would bring up certain things, it's like they would hush me because they only wanted to speak about certain subjects. They didn't want me to get into properties that we owned in Mexico. They didn't want to know any of that. They basically said that they had no jurisdiction over that. And I did disclose to them, though, that, you know, I had my house in Plainfield.
Plainfield is a small, wealthy town about an hour west of Chicago.
I paid for it with drug proceeds. Our husbands bought us several high-end luxury vehicles that we brought over from Mexico, several of them. And I disclosed that, you know, we had purchased houses. I disclosed everything to them.
The $200,000 wasn't the only money that Val collected from the brothers' drug debts. There was plenty more.
There was some money that was collected, and we put the money away in the house in Plainfield. We didn't know where to put it, so we put it in the theater room where we had this, built-up floor, and we kind of just removed the fascia boards of the floor, and we put the money in there. Jay's attorney wanted to see me in person. He told me that the government wanted some money that was picked up in D.C. and that it was in Jay and Peter's best interest to turn in that money because they wanted it and they wanted it handed over, and that that person, whoever it was that turned in the money, would be given immunity. Me and Viv went back to the house in Plainfield, and we bought these big Tupperware, bins that you would kind of keep in your garage if you were keeping, sporting goods or things like that that you want to store away. So we put all the bulk currency inside those bins, which was about, maybe 8 to 10 bins. And we put those in the SUV. And when we loaded them in the SUV, like the truck was completely full. I couldn't even see out of the like rear view mirror, the side mirrors, just because we had all the seats down. And I drove it to the attorney's office, which was on the north side of Chicago. When we got there, the attorney was in complete like shock. Like he didn't know what to do. He had no idea that what he was supposed to do with all this bulk cash. Like he didn't want to be responsible for it because it was the middle of the night. So he then called the government and let them know that he had the money in his possession. At that point, he was just saying that they did not want to come pick up the money. They didn't want to seize the money. So the next day, we went to the bank and we actually deposited that money at the bank. So it kind of looked like a scene from like Scarface, where we're walking in with these bins of money and they're just counting and going through the money counters and counting it. And it ended up being like $4 million.
The $4 million was only a portion of the full amount of drug proceeds that was collected by Val and other family members. Val handed it in to Jay's attorney with the expectation that she would get immunity.
He let me know that he wasn't going to disclose to the government who actually turned in the money until he got the immunity in writing, because that they were playing games. So at that point, I know that he was trying to protect me, and he thought he was doing the right thing by having me turn in that money, because that's exactly what they wanted.
Remember, Val didn't have any protection. She was not a part of the witness protection program like the twins were.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern.
It's just a shame, you know, that they took him from us.
Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, knocking on doors, uncovering new evidence, including the DNA of a potential killer.
My name is Danny Smith. I'm a detective with Miramar Police Department. This is Scott Weinberger. We're actually reopening an old case, and your name came up.
Untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one murder, but almost a dozen.
I thought they were going to kill me, so I kept my mouth shut, and I didn't say anything. All these years, I didn't say anything.
Listen to Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And guess what? So are we.
Just in case you forgot, I'm Tori Deal. I'm a six-time finalist and a Challenge champion.
And I'm Anissa Ferrer, and I've been gracing your screens for the last two decades. I am a veteran challenger and Challenge All-Star.
And speaking of All-Stars, All-Stars 4 is finally here.
I'm going to be honest. I literally thought this day was never going to come.
Well, the Challenge gods have answered our prayers, and we're going to be right here along with you fans covering every episode on the podcast.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, redemption seekers, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
Anyone can win, relationships matter, and only one all-star will claim the title of Challenge Champion.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV True Crime Podcast, To Live and Die in L.A. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world, and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turned sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
As important as choosing the right destination when traveling is choosing the right travel partner.
Gene!
Eugene Fodor!
Gene, we'll boot it!
Much of the joy you will find on the road comes from the person you share it with.
So you write the books, Gene, and Vlastar runs the business. I understand now. It is a wise man who marries a wiser woman.
But be careful and choose your travel partner well, because the worst trips result when two partners have two different agendas.
Get down!
I'm not stupid, Gene. Something is going on, and it's high time you tell me the truth.
Freeze, Americano! Huh? Oh!
Gene, run!
So travel before it's too late. Your money will return, your time won't, and we're all too quickly approaching that final destination.
Listen to Fodor's Guide to Espionage on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The government made a lot of special accommodations for Jay and Pete. Not only were they allowed to be together in the shoe, they eventually got to see their families, something that's highly unusual in WITSEC.
So they kind of agreed to allow us to see our family and like on Fridays for a little while at the same place where they're briefing at their headquarters or whatever in the DA office. They had like a room where they process, you know, inmates or you know, people they arrested. And it's like a pretty simple room. They probably just take your pictures and fingerprint you in. They have like all these little like holding closets, like with a little bench, and the door has a little peephole. And then they had like in the corner of them, there's two bathrooms right next to each other, you know? And there's only one entrance to this room. And my wife would come and bring the kids, and my mom came, and my older brother, and Val, and Jay, and the boys. And on one of those occasions, it was around, like, that Valentine's was, like, on that, during the, during that visit somehow.
Like, the wake up.
Yeah. I remember that because I remember she wore, like, something red or something. And I'm carrying my baby. It was kind of crowded. Now, whenever my brother and I were out of a cell, like, there was a lot of agents, you know? So they would, like, crowd. And they would, like, stand by the doorway, you know? And, like, just kind of, like, they'll be conversating among themselves. And there's, like, cameras up there, too, like, in that room. So I remember, like, she gets up to go make the baby a bottle. And the baby, like, fell asleep in Mara. And so I, like, put the baby down. So right away, she's, like, making the baby the bottle. She's, like, rinsing the bottle out in the bathroom. And I just walked her towards the door with her, and I'm watching her, like, clean the baby's bottle. And there's no one, like, I mean, they can't see me from that point. Like, they're distracted by talking to amongst each other. And I remember just walk into the bathroom. It's embarrassing because, like, there's my mom's there, and you know, and
so everyone was there.
Everyone was there.
They not really paying attention to
me. I told Peter, I'm like, come in.
Yeah, she was like, come in. Then I remember just like.
And then he had the baby in your arms.
I had the bottles.
Oh, I had the
baby,
bottles. Yeah.
Then just going into the bathroom with her and being so nervous. So. Like, I was, like, nervous, but I just missed her so much. And I remember just, like, at that point, like, so what? Whatever happens, happens.
Yeah.
And I remember her telling me, like, come on, Pete. Like, I want to have your baby. And I was like, you're out your mind. She's like, yeah, I want to have your baby boy. And don't worry, you know, by the time you're coming home, he'll be perfect at that age. And you could play with him. And I was like, you don't know what you're asking for. But I was like, okay. You know, just in the heat of the moment, it was like...
Yeah, I think at that point, we were just conversating at that point, mm-hmm. right there. But I didn't say play with him. I said, I'll have another baby. We'll have our kids by that time. They'll be grown and, you know, you'll have, you know, you have a whole family by like, the time you come home.
Yeah, so she's like, come on, Peek.
But mind you, you know, we're still living on that, oh, you're going to get only 8 years. We're getting in the best situation where, you know, he's the biggest cooperator. And
so you thought eight years max?
I thought
a 10-year sentence.
I thought maybe eight years max. But at that point, I was like, you'll probably be home in like 3, 4, 5 years. Like, I didn't think it was going to even be 8 years.
I mean, you know, we're just... I guess we were hoping for the best. Anyways, that moment just was so intense and we got away.
And it was, yeah. And then it was super fertile at that time because I just had my daughter.
So we went for it.
Yeah. So
we got busy.
Yeah.
In the toilet.
Yeah.
In the bathroom. Yeah.
I believe we got away twice. So there's like one more time and I just, afterwards I was feeling like, what did we just do? I hope she's not pregnant, you know? And then of course she was pregnant.
Was there no cameras in there?
There was cameras out there. Like, but remember, there's a lot of agents. It wasn't like, and I remember we didn't talk about it. She was just told me one day, like, she said something like, are you ready to play with you?
I know. I was already feeling sick. And I was like, I'm pregnant. 100% I'm pregnant. So I took a pregnancy test. And then he called and I'm like, I'm pregnant. And it was a lot of different feelings.
It was just so, like, such a shocker to hear her say, I'm pregnant. Like,
yeah.
And we were both afraid, like happy, but scared.
Yeah.
And I remember just like thinking, uh-oh, like, what are the feds going to say?
Were you allowed to have sex in the bathroom in the custody office? Mm-mm.
Of course
Mm-mm.
not.
And
no.
It became such a big issue. I just didn't see how I was jeopardizing like so much, you know?
So when did they find out?
So the staff at the prison know I have a baby. Like, she knows she was pregnant. They see her. But I guess they assume, like, wait, how long has he been in custody? Something. But I guess they just figured that's the way she came. That's the way they met me. She's pregnant. So I have a legal visit about 2010. I'm signing some papers and they're doing an interview. And, all right, see you later. The next morning, like at 7 in the morning, they come knock on my door like, you know, PF, get up, legal visit. I'm like, legal visit? What are you talking about? Yeah, get dressed. And I go and I see the agent and the prosecutor in their same clothes from the day before. I was like, what the hell's going on? And they let me have it. I'm gonna ask you a question. Don't fucking lie to me. You have a son? I was like, yes. Is it yours? Like, I hope so. What the fuck? They let me have it. They were so pissed off.
So they figured it out?
Yeah.
What did they say?
They made me like be thorough about exactly what happened. And they're like, this is gonna be the most embarrassing thing that you fucking deserve in your selfish. And I look back and I'm like, I understand how that was, you know. I can't say I regret it. I have my beautiful son. I can't say like, who wouldn't take the chance if they had it, you know? But they were very pissed off and it just became a humongous issue. They had people from D.C. come interview me and they were doing a big investigation about it. Like, to see if I had, like, somehow bribed someone or were they letting me as a benefit and, you know, and it was like a big issue, you know?
Because it was against...
Like, I broke the rules and stuff, and I'm like, no, I'm a man, that's my wife. Like, if someone gets the opportunity, I'm sure it's not the first time it's happened, and it won't be the last. And I had other issues, you know, like, they would call it the three Bs. The Bentley, the baby, and the billboards.
The twins became infamous for the three Bs. The baby was just the start. Next, the Bentley.
It was her fiance's birthday, so I ordered her the car. Buying her a car like that was like buying her a Buick at that time. I had my sister-in-law, Valerie, help me. You know, not at that time, she was like trying to help me. Like, she understood what I wanted to do for her, so. Like, don't worry, I'll take care of it, you know? To be honest, it was stupid because my wife didn't need a Bentley, you know?
Why did you want to buy her a Bentley?
I don't know. I just thought, like, what could I get at her birthday? You know, it's coming up. I mean, we had 10 cars. I mean, you know, we had every car you could think of.
You had 10 cars at that time?
Yeah.
Still? Yeah. Did the government not take any of them?
At that point, I think... No. Not yet.
Mm-mm. So what cars did you have?
We had every SUV you could think of. We had multiple, same Range Rovers. Like, we'd buy them, you know, 2-3 at a time.
I had a little party for my birthday. And then they were like, go outside. And I went outside and there's a big Red Bull on the car. And I was like, shocked and surprised and... I was truly missing him. Yeah, truly missing him at that point. I was pregnant, emotional.
I mean, the car didn't make no difference, to be honest. It wasn't like what you think it was at that point. You know?
No.
Like, we're more in need of each other mm-hmm. than a supercar. You know? And not, you know, considering the trouble it caused me, like, it was stupid. When the government discovered like that, what we did to acquire that money, you know, that I was going to turn over to them.
Right. So that's why it was a problem.
No, mm-hmm. that was just part of it. Like, we spent the money on stuff mm-hmm. like that. Just anything that could hinder, you know, you as a credible witness, you know, it's a bad decision.
Yeah, it was a bad decision.
The twins were moved from MCC Chicago to a different prison in order to help protect their identity. They often moved prisons, and we can't always name where they were due to WITSEC confidentiality. The first two Bs had caused a lot of trouble for the twins, but it was the third B, the billboards, which happened after they moved prisons, that was the final straw.
One bad decision after another.
I got the billboards. And the billboards was just a violation of my security at the time. And yeah, they were not happy about that.
We all paid the price for that one.
Peter, I remember for Valentine's Day, he wanted to put up these two billboards. Two huge billboards on the interstate, like when you roll up to the visit.
That's what my intention was, just to surprise her on her way home. That she sees like a little token of my love and appreciation for her, and I felt like.
And it was a next exit, where the facility was. So.
Was there not small billboards? I got.
They were like real, like.
They had to be like 300 feet across. Like to me, like they're that huge.
Both of them, and it said Philo. Marrying you was the best thing that ever happened.
And it was black. The sign was black with like big red hearts and white bright letters. So you kind of missed
it. It was
them.
Simple words. It was like, marrying you was the best thing
mm-hmm.
that happened to me.
Mm-hmm.
I love you too. It's
wonderful. Yeah.
You're a grateful husband.
I can't wait to spend forever with the second one.
Yeah. Yes. They were absolutely beautiful. Like, I couldn't believe. Like,
you know what
I parked. I parked on the side of the highway and I just like was just staring at them like in tears. With my baby, and I was just staring at them, and we were alone. We're leaving the visit, and we were just there, and I was just like, look back at my babies, and I was just looking at the sign, and you know, I couldn't believe it. Like, Peter's always been romantic, but I feel like this gesture was like just like really over
you
the
made,
top.
It made you cry.
Oh yeah, I was in tears, and then I felt like I felt happy and then lonely, and then I looked at my babies and I just felt like I wanted him home so bad. And it reminded me of what I felt for him as well. And not only did he show me what he felt for me, I mean, putting these big to huge signs on the side of the highway.
For 6 months, you were able to...
For 6 months, yes. So, and I looked at them every time and I stared at them every time, and it really made my heart.
And I think that to be able to show her in like a big way, or to do something because, not because you can, because you wanted to, like it's, you know, it was one of those moments that I felt like I just want to make her feel as special she was to me. What got me in trouble was that they made a big, like, a news.
It was on the news.
It was on the news. So they, like, a journalist seen him, or they talked about him, and they went out to make a story. Like, look what a husband did for his wife. Never imagined that the guy who did it was in prison. But later on, I knew the trouble was coming when the COs would come over to our unit and be like, who's the guy that put up the billboards? Don't forget, they're not supposed to know who you are, you know? And I didn't put her name out there. I just put, like, you know, I look like them, man. And I'm like, this is going to be trouble, you know?
It was trouble.
It was.
It was just not for Peter.
I didn't say that. What I thought he would have said, because of the billboards, my best friend, my brother, who I spent my whole life with, got transferred. Wow, that's a little bit bigger, huh?
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpert.
It's just a shame, you know, that they took him from us.
Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, knocking on doors, uncovering new evidence, including the DNA of a potential killer.
My name is Danny Smith. I'm a detective with Miramar Police Department. This is Scott Weinberger. We're actually reopening an old case, and your name came up.
Untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one murder, but almost a dozen.
I thought they were going to kill me, so I kept my mouth shut and I didn't say anything. All these years, I didn't say anything.
Listen to Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And guess what? So are we.
Just in case you forgot, I'm Tori Deal. I'm a 6-time finalist and a Challenge champion.
And I'm Anissa Ferrer, and I've been gracing your screens for the last 2 decades. I am a veteran challenger and Challenge All-Star.
And speaking of All-Stars, All-Stars 4 is finally here.
I'm going to be honest. I literally thought this day was never going to come.
Well, the Challenge gods have answered our prayers, and we're going to be right here along with you fans covering every episode on the podcast.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, redemption seekers, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
Anyone can win, relationships matter, and only one all-star will claim the title of Challenge Champion.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV True Crime Podcast, To Live and Die in L.A. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world, and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, it's start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
As important as choosing the right destination when traveling is choosing the right travel partner.
Gene!
Eugene Fodor!
Gene, was booted!
Much of the joy you will find on the road comes from the person you share it with.
So you write the books, Gene, and Vlastar runs the business. I understand now. He's a wise man, Marie is a wiser woman.
But be careful and choose your travel partner well, because the worst trips result when two partners have two different agendas.
Get down!
I'm not stupid, Gene. Something is going on, and it's high time you tell me the truth.
Freeze, Americano! Huh? Oh!
Gene, run!
So travel before it's too late. Your money will return, your time won't, and we're all too quickly approaching that final destination.
Listen to Fodor's Guide to Espionage on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Pete's very public declaration of love for his wife, Vilo, Viv Lopez, changed everything. It brought along a fourth B, breakup. The twins were separated for the first time in their lives.
You know, we all suffered the repercussions.
We had the privilege. It was a privilege granted to us by a special privilege because of our cooperation. The Department of Justice allowed us. Allowed identical twins, which were not, was not, it was against policy to be together.
Should we say that gave us special privilege?
Sure.
Yeah.
I guess it was. We were together.
They made an exception for us?
They made an exception for us and put us together. We were not supposed to be together, and we were identical twins, and they basically told us, don't fuck it up. We were bunkies. We were sallies in the same shop in prison, and we took it for granted. But the billboards were the beginning of, like, something solid they had. I guess he decided to do billboards, and they found out, and they started an investigation. The whole time, they think that because who Val is, and because who I am, personality-wise, they kind of just said it's Jay, because there was a V on it. And I think they're thinking V-Lo, because they're thinking that J-Lo,
yeah.
Val. One day in March of that year, March, April, they come get me to the cell at 4 in the morning. Like, hey, you know, why should I even talk to you? And you come down to R&D, and I'm like,
to put on sweater.
I see that. I look to the window, I see that there's lieutenants, there's a couple guards. And I'm like, man, what could they want? And now with my brother, he's like, I don't know. And I'm just like, oh, all right. And I go, and there's doors, right? So as soon as I step through the door, they lock it. And I go into R&D.
R&D stands for Receiving and Discharging. It's where prisoners are processed and identities checked to make sure the right person is going to the right place. It's the first stop when you arrive and the last before you leave.
He's like, he has my bag that actually came, you know, from Mexico. On the table, he said, strip. Start taking off my clothes and, you know, regular check, but he's like, hold on, I need to make sure. Let me see your tattoos. I said, I don't have tattoos. Let me look at your body, like making sure. And he has both our files. So he's like, making sure I don't have my tattoo on my neck and my chest. Okay, we got the right one. Put on your clothes. And you had the same marshals come get you, and, you know, they roll up bulletproof cars. It's like 5 in the morning, 6 in the morning. Big entourage, and I'm like, hey, what's going on? They're like, oh, you'll find out. Don't worry about it, man. Where are we going? I can't tell you. If I could see forward in the truck, it's a bulletproof truck, and I'm noticing they're talking and a little bit whispering, like, yeah. Well, he's not going to be with his brother no more. I'm hearing them talk, and I'm like, that's weird. I could hear him say it's coming up. As soon as he said that, it's coming up. I know what they're talking about.
The billboard.
Yeah, because I know that it's there. I know it's close by. We just left it. It's coming up.
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah. What you been doing lately? He kind of looks back. I'm like, nothing, but I'm acting stupid. Like, and as we're driving, I could see the huge billboards. I could see that they're black. I could see them in the corner of my eye. I already looked far before he turned. And I'm like, oh, shit. I'm thinking, wow, they look nice. But when he said, yeah, so what you been doing? He kind of looked at me. He wanted to see my reaction. And I stared at him. I didn't even look at the billboards. I'm looking from the corner of my eyes. I'm like, oh, not much. What are the kids? But as soon as he did that, I'm like, shit. They know. I didn't think that. I was still going to get in trouble. I'm just like, okay, they know. And they drove me to the airport, and they didn't want to talk to me about where I was going, and it was actually a big jet. And I kind of made my way up. You know, you're shackled. And I kind of made my way up to the airplane, and the pilot said, hey, where are we flying? Where are we going to? He said, New York. I'm like, hey, like, why the fuck are we going to New York? And he's like, just get in. We can't tell you anything. Just sit down. It was a plane ride to New York, to the MCC New York.
Jay landed at Newark Airport. He was greeted by a sea of 30 squad cars and a whole bunch of marshals. They accompanied him on the 40-minute drive from the airport to MCC New York, right in the middle of downtown Manhattan.
You know, I'm thinking I'm going just for a week, a couple of days, and I'm going to go back to my brother. And, you know, I go through the process. When I get there, I meet the unit manager. I'm like, excuse me, man, for how long am I here for?
For good.
That hurt me. And I was like, but why? She's like, oh, because we need to keep a close eye on your ass. You think you're slick, huh? And I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about, man.
You want to tell about your
billboards? I said, yeah, sure. You just got the wrong one. That was my brother.
Surviving El Chapo, The Twins Who Brought Down a Drug Lord, Season 2, is hosted by Curtis 50 Cent Jackson and me, Charlie Webster. Produced by myself and Jackson McLennan. Assistant producer and research support by Casey Hertz. Edit and sound design by Nico Palella. Theme music and original score by Ryan Sorensen. It's executive produced by Curtis 50 Cent Jackson and me, Charlie Webster. Curtis 50 Cent Jackson presents a Lionsgate Sound and G-Unit Audio production exclusively for iHeart Podcasts.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold-Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold-Blooded, the Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, acclaimed comics writer and notorious Scott Summers hater, Rosie Knight.
Well, hello, Emmy-winning podcaster and totally unbiased Targaryen royal supporter, Jason Concepcion.
Somehow the X-Ray Vision podcast has returned.
And like always, we'll be here every week.
You'll hear from TV writers, actors, comics creators, pop culture critics.
Nothing is off the table.
Listen to X-Ray Vision on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.